I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Joe Illick and John Andrews. Joe Illick is Artistic Director of the Santa Fe Concert Association. John Andrews is a Shakespearean scholar. And the two of them are getting together on December 4th for an event called Verdifying Shakespeare, exploring Verdi's operatic treatments of Shakespearean themes, presented by the Santa Fe Opera Guild. It's the 200th anniversary of Verdi's birth this fall. It's at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So let's talk for a moment about Shakespeare and Verdi. Centuries apart, but both extremely prolific, creative people whose works are still being performed all the time today. Which Shakespeare plays did Verdi take on?
Well, he did. He completed three. He did Macbeth. I guess that was in, what,
1847?
And then a revision of it in 1865?
Yes, 65, yeah.
Yes. And then toward the end of his career, he did Othello and Falstaff.
What do we know about the process by which Verdi looked to Shakespeare as the inspiration for his work?
I think we know that Verdi really revered Shakespeare and felt that he could do something different from what he typically did as an Italian opera composer when he had the inspiration of Shakespeare behind him. Italian opera is all about love, you fall in love, and then you die because the love didn't work out or something like that. And as soon as Verdi, who already had 8 or 10 operas under his belt, came to Macbeth fairly early in his career, say when he was 34 years old, he tackled an opera that has no love story at all. It was not only dramatically different, but he handled it musically very differently from anything he'd done. So clearly Shakespeare, his favorite playwright, drove him to do new things.
And was that not also true, Joe, when he got to Falstaff? It's comic, and he didn't write a great deal of comic opera.
In fact,
was that his only one?
No, he wrote one before he ever was able to become a well-known opera composer. And his early comedy, which has mistaken identities, sort of like Shakespeare comedies, terribly. And at the same time he wrote it, his wife and children died, and he just retreated from the theater. He said forever. Fortunately, a very wise impresario was able to lure him back, but that experience kept him from writing comedies. And then finally, at the age of 80, he wrote this great comedy, Falstaff, based on the character of Falstaff, both as we meet him in The Merry Wives of Windsor and as we meet him in Henry IV, Part II. So he blends the purely silly Falstaff with a more, I don't want to say noble Falstaff, but a Falstaff who has a sense of his own position and makes other people enjoy him more.
Now, what was it that W.H. Auden had to say about that?
Auden thought that Merry Wives of Windsor was a worthless play other than that it provided the plot vehicle for Verdi to create. But Auden was a huge Shakespeare fan. I mean,
that's
he wrote
right.
books about just the quality of Shakespeare's poetry and how Shakespeare's poetry evolved and started great but went so beyond everybody else living in the Elizabethan and then Jamesian times that he was really a team of one, just exploring everything that he could.
Yes. You know, as we were putting together the title for this program, we came up with Verdifying Shakespeare. It occurred to me that this could be translated greening Shakespeare.
Yeah, right.
The greening of Shakespeare. So it's an ecological exploration.
So just for all
writers.
Of our listeners, the word verde in Italian means green,
yes.
The color green.
Right. Giuseppe Verdi, in my childhood home, we called him Joe Green.
Okay, there you are.
Yes, and a lot of people didn't realize that he came back as an NFL football player, Mean Joe Green for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Meanwhile, back to Verdi and Shakespeare, I wondered if the two of you could talk about the different ways that drama, especially tragedy, is manifested on stage in theater and in opera. I mean, you've got the same story, but
yes.
They're treated so differently because the genres are one is
the genres are so different, and yet one of the similarities between Verdi and Shakespeare is that they both fully fleshed out three-dimensional characters. There's not a lot to love about the character Iago. He is conniving. He brings around the death of several people who are blameless people who were minding their own business.
A true villain.
Well, he's a true villain, and yet both Verdi and Shakespeare portray him as a three-dimensional character. In other Shakespeare plays, I think Shakespeare, he never creates a caricature, nor does Verdi, even in a small part. So when people cavalierly say both are men of the theater, because they obviously devoted their lives to it and traveled and you know, did they really put everything they had into it. But what else did they do? They created situations and characters that were real. On the other hand, both Verdi and Shakespeare created situations that were unreal and made them so theatrically believable that we suspend our disbelief. I mean, audiences in Shakespeare's time, I'm sure, did believe in the supernatural, and Shakespeare fills his plays with the supernatural and portents and omens. But 250 years later, I'm not so sure that Verdi's audiences had the same credence level for the supernatural, and yet Verdi doesn't hesitate, not only in Macbeth with apparitions and ghosts, but in other operas too, you know, in Don Carlo, where Schiller doesn't end the play with eight dead kings coming back and taking care of the situation. But Verdi doesn't hesitate to do that. So I think both of them believe both in the reality and in the artifice of the theater.
And there's a kind of grandeur in Shakespearean tragedy that has often led critics to refer to Othello, for example, as an operatic play, having largely to do with the language that that the title character uses. And by the way, I think probably his name in Shakespeare's time would have been pronounced the same way Verdi pronounced it, Othello.
Really?
Yes. You have Antony, for example, mm-hmm. spelled T-H, just as the title character's
and
name
the
is spelled.
British people still say A-N-T-H-O-N-Y.
They still say Antony.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think it's very likely that Othello would have been the pronunciation mm-hmm. on the stage of the Globe.
Oh, well, what about Macbeth?
Could very Macbeth? Well have been Macbeth. That's quite possible. Yes.
See, while English-speaking people have developed this th sound, Italians never have.
That's right.
So the play Macbeth, or maybe Macbeth, in Italian is Macbetto. And the play Othello, what we now call Othello, in Italian is Otello.
Yes.
Right. And in opera, we don't know anyway because we're reading the subtitles.
There you are.
That's right. And there's a recent book by Gary Wills, who can write about just about anything. And it's a book entitled simply Shakespeare and Verdi, or is it Verdi and Shakespeare? I can't remember.
Well, it's those two guys.
It's those two.
It's good that you don't remember, because it gives a sort of equality to this whole conversation.
There we are. Okay. And one of the points that Gary makes is that they were both multi-talented figures. Shakespeare was a part owner of the theater mm-hmm. In which his plays were performed. He acted in many of not only his own plays, but plays Ben Jonson and other playwrights. He was probably the first director of his plays and would have worked very closely with the company to make sure that his dramatic intention was realized on the stage. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he was a playwright. And he was writing for particular actors. And
Verdi was composing for particular singers.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Now, that's something that I wanted to ask. I mean, now so many opera singers are also first-rate actors. And, I mean, I only know from the Santa Fe Opera.
But it's true all over. That's a much more important value than it was in Verdi's time.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Was Verdi writing for actors at all?
Verdi struggled to get singers who would act. It's not that acting during an opera is a new idea, but it certainly is important now in a way that it wasn't, you know, 50 years ago. But Verdi said over and over, I can't have this person play this role. They sing too beautifully and they don't catch on fire on stage.
Yeah.
So Verdi clearly wanted singers who would become emotionally involved with the part so convincingly that the audience would believe them, rather than the operas that immediately preceded Verdi that were called bel canto, which means beautiful singing. I mean, they weren't called that then, but we have come to call them that, because they're so much about vocal pyrotechnics and so little about a dramatic storyline that inevitably drives us forward the way Verdi and Shakespeare do.
Right.
And acting styles in Verdi's time would have been more oratorical than they are now. They would have been less naturalistic. And so in many ways, opera and dramatic art on stage would have been similar stylistically.
What do we know about what acting styles were like in Shakespeare's time?
It's hard to know. The best guide, I think, is in Hamlet's advice to the visiting players, where he talks about the need to really pay attention to imitating humanity credibly. Mm-hmm. He talks about bad actors who imitate humanity abominably. That spelling, by the way, was the standard spelling of that word in Shakespeare's time.
Abominably.
And it was because the word was thought to derive from two Latin words that meant against humanity.
Well, they just stole the H from Othello.
Perhaps they did. but in any case, Hamlet talks about speaking trippingly on the tongue. And he talks about not overdoing it with gestures, for example. Having a kind of modesty or discretion.
Economy.
Yes, yes. So I suspect that acting styles in Shakespeare's time would have been more natural, more like what we have now, than what they would have been like in the middle of the 19th century.
It's interesting because it sounds like if Verdi could come back and see the way opera is being performed today, he'd be happy.
I think he would be very happy. He would certainly be happy that so many of his operas are performed thousands of times every year.
Well, that too.
He'd want some royalties too. And he would deserve them.
No, but I mean the fact that this naturalistic and very vivid and real acting style is happening.
Well, there's a story, and I'm sure it's true because everybody said the same thing, that when Verdi wrote Macbeth, he demanded rehearsal time in a way that he never had before he wrote Macbeth. And that a duet between Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, he wanted not so much sung as whispered. And supposedly he rehearsed this with them 150 times.
Wow.
And drove them all crazy. But I think that the effect on the audience was electric because they were expecting another opera that was like so many, you know, operas were like movies. There were new ones every week. And suddenly here was an opera where characters were... They were conniving, murderous. They were engaged in this conspiracy, and they were whispering to each other like they were both terrified that they might be overheard, but also beginning to express their own fear at what they were doing. Their own terror comes out.
What's amazing is that a good opera singer can whisper, and you hear it in every corner of the opera house. I don't know how they do that.
Well, partly by getting your attention before they do it.
Right. Yeah, that's part of it. Now, how much of... We're talking to Joe Illick and John Andrews about verdifying Shakespeare. How much, if any, of Shakespeare's language was used in any direct kind of way? I mean, obviously, it's different language, but were they taking kind of direct... Was Verdi taking direct lines out of Shakespeare?
There's a big story here, and I'll give you a very short version because you can come on the 4th of December and hear the long version. But the... libretto for Macbeth, Macbetto, by Piave, is loose. And the three witches become a chorus of bearded women. You know, there are certainly many quotes that derive loosely from Shakespeare, but what Verdi had the fantastic good luck to find later in life was a librettist who could capture the essence of Shakespeare and, without being too literal, found what was best in Shakespeare and could put it in Italian. And this poet was Arrigo Boito. He was a composer himself and wrote an opera that's still done frequently, not as frequently as Verdi's operas, but Boito's Mephistophele is still performed. But as a team, Boito and Verdi writing Shakespeare together was fabulous. And Verdi was 74 when he wrote Otello and 80 when he wrote Falstaff. So it was lucky that this younger poet and Verdi were able to connect.
And they worked on all of them?
Just these two Shakespeare operas.
Yeah. And Joe, did Boito know English? Was he able to read Shakespeare in the...
He was, but he wasn't... I mean, he was better in English than Verdi was, but they both knew it in Italian translation.
Yes, yes. I think one of the amazing things about Shakespeare is how well he does translate. And it doesn't require literal translations. It can be languages very, very different from English. I remember hearing, for example, Philip Brockbank of the University of Liverpool talking about an occasion when he was a visiting professor at Shanghai, and was invited to see a production of Measure for Measure, expecting it to be a very long evening, but knowing that there was no way he could refuse the invitation. And he said he came away persuaded not only that it was the finest performance of Shakespeare he had ever seen, but in many ways the finest night of theater he had ever experienced.
Well.
And he was persuaded, he said, that in the future, Shakespeare should be performed only in the original Chinese.
That's amazing. When Puccini saw operas that he didn't understand because they were in English and was drawn in, he said, that clearly proves that it's the best subject for an opera because you don't have to understand a word. And there is something about both Verdi and Shakespeare that transcends the need to understand.
Well, and I mean, even those of us who don't really know Elizabethan English and then go see a movie with Leonardo DiCaprio playing Romeo, we get everything, even though we don't understand mm-hmm. half of what he's saying. What they're saying.
And yet, Shakespeare's grasp of the English language was so fabulous. And as I said earlier, in his career, he was already going beyond anybody else. But as he grew and developed, this only became more and more so that he was inventing the English language. I mean, so much of our modern appreciation of the English language actually comes from Shakespeare.
Who was it said, Shakespeare is so full of clichés?
Yeah, because he wrote them all.
Yeah, especially Hamlet. I mean, Hamlet is nothing but clichés.
What are some of the things that we have from Hamlet? Some of the phrases.
Hoist by his own petard.
To thine own self be true.
That's from Hamlet.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Polonius says it.
Yes. A lot of the most quotable Shakespeare is from Polonius.
And, very interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Verdifying Shakespeare is happening on Wednesday, December 4th at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation. And so the two of you will be talking about Shakespeare and Verdi as we're doing now. Are you going to be playing any music?
Well, there's a piano there, so we'll be playing and singing. I'm sure that everybody who comes will be invited to sing a little bit of opera.
It's an opera sing-along.
Yes. A little bit, yes.
And Joe will be handling all the special effects.
Now, were there any other Shakespeare plays that Verdi worked on?
Well, there were plans, weren't there?
What, King Lear was one?
King Lear was the big one. There were fleeting plans for The Tempest and for Romeo and Juliet, but the big plan was King Lear, and Verdi spent decades trying to get Somma to create a libretto. There is a libretto, but he never said it. And I think the reason is that the theme in King Lear between King Lear and his daughter Cordelia is explored by Verdi so thoroughly in the opera Rigoletto. Verdi wrote lots of operas that explore the theme of father-daughter relationships, perhaps because he lost his daughter when she wasn't yet 2 years old. But when he wrote Rigoletto, he said, this is a character worthy of Shakespeare, the highest compliment that he could pay.
And doesn't Rigoletto have some comparison to the Fool in King Lear as well?
Yes. It's interesting because Rigoletto embraces the character both of Lear himself and mm-hmm. the Fool.
Mm-hmm. In Shakespeare, there's quite a bit of gender confusion, perhaps particularly in the comedies. And in opera, there's a lot of, what is it, women
reverse
playing male
gender confusion. Yeah, so there are no castrati anymore. So many opera roles that are boys are played by women. The reverse of what was true in Shakespeare's day, which is that all roles that are women's roles were played by boys.
Right. Boys.
Boys.
Not men.
We were just discussing that.
We have no documentation that supports the idea that boys whose voices had changed were still playing female parts. But that doesn't mean that it couldn't have been done on occasion.
That's interesting because a man could have a long career as an actor playing male parts, whereas a boy, there's a kind of window of opportunity, which
is adolescence. That's right.
And late boyhood.
Yes.
And then he's out, or he has to start playing, I guess, some of those people became actors and played male parts.
Yeah, there's a little joke about this, for example, in A Midsummer Night's Dream, where one of the characters is asked to play Thisbe. And he says, no, I can't play Thisbe. I have a beard coming. And the point is that his voice is changing.
Right. Very interesting. Well, much to talk about. Joe Illick is Artistic Director of the Santa Fe Concert Association. John Andrews is a Shakespearean scholar. And the two of them will be speaking at the event Verdifying Shakespeare, exploring Verdi's operatic treatments of Shakespearean themes. It's presented by the Santa Fe Opera Guild, and the occasion is the 200th anniversary of Verdi's birth, which is somewhere in the general vicinity of now-ish, sort of?
November 1813.
Oh, okay. All right. So,
and we're not too far off the 450th anniversary of Shakespeare's birth.
Okay.
Which will be next April.
That's right.
Next April. So this is all happening at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation on Barcelona Street in Santa Fe. It's free to Opera Guild members. It's a pretty low price. If you are not a member, you can also join at the door. It's at 5:30. Lots of parking. John and Joe, thank you so much for being with us on
thank
the
you.
Radio
thank
Cafe.
Thank you, Charlotte.